IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 80 of the Killing It,
Killing It Podcast.
You guys may or may not have noticed, I take out some of that pause. It's like, you know, we pay by the minute for this.
We are a totally polished organization over here.
So all the news this week is Ryan's news. Ryan's got the green screen. He's totally stepped up. He was traveling. He was on an actual airplane.
I know. For everybody who listens to it as an audio podcast, Ryan has this cool new setup in his office now. So he actually has the green screen and he's got this cool background right now. Like, you're all polished and done.
See, I got one little baby step at a time. And then after, I don't know, 6,000 months in quarantine, you look back and you're like, wait a second. This is an actual professional studio. I've got all the soft cloth dampers for quality audio. I've got all the uplighting and backlighting for the video on the green screen. Got a 4K camera. I'm like, this is cool. I should probably actually start using it for my work.
So someone's going to ask, every time 4K camera gets mentioned, you've got to tell the brand, and you know, maybe we'll put a link into Amazon.
Oh yeah. See, and I will happily be an endorser of this product. It is the Avaya Huddle Room camera. And if you just do a Google search for Avaya Huddle Room, holy cow. And as only Dave and Carl have gotten to fully appreciate in the production part of this process, has a little remote where it'll zoom and pan and
tilt.
It's got all kinds of things.
He loves that little toy.
He stands in the back of his room, watch this.
Exactly. I can sit in the easy chair on the other side of the room, connect up the lav mic, and then make the camera come to me. The technology is excellent.
So I have to ask, how big is this room, this office you're in? Because we've seen it morph. You know, you added shelves. I don't think you painted it, but you put in artwork, you put stuff on the walls.
Yeah, it has gone through generations, and we did. It was all brand new shelving, all of this stuff. And we got an informal room rating. I've not been officially selected by these people because I ain't famous, but I got an informal one from one of those folks there. I got 9.5 out of 10. And so I was feeling pretty good about that. The room is 12 by 15, right? It's not
a regular bedroom size.
Yeah, it's an office-sized room, and yet the magic of video angles, right? For any of you who've ever actually done like news studio or professional studio quality stuff, you look at these people on camera and you think it's this large, sprawling space where everything is spread out. And really, it's just a little corner of a room where they got two little folding chairs and a green screen behind them. That you can do a lot with angles from the corners of the room and different lighting setups. We're getting ready to roll out a bunch of training and certification videos for a client on a project. And they were like, well, we need to go to a studio. And I was like, I am your Huckleberry.
I have all of the tools. Nice.
All righty. Well, we have a sponsor this week. And as always, we absolutely appreciate our sponsors, and we encourage you to check them out.
So we want to thank Acronis, because Acronis invites you to the Acronis Global Cyber Summit. This is the premier event dedicated to connecting the IT channel and IT pros with actionable insights, solutions, and strategies for effective cyber protection. Bringing together service providers, value-added resellers, CIOs, and ISVs, the summit is the world's largest gathering of thought leaders and industry experts sharing insights and advances in the field of cyber protection. Featuring a long list of speakers, you can sign up for free at acronis.events/summit2020. You'll even be able to catch me doing my Why Do We Care online. We'll see you there. We also want to do a quick shout out, because we made a We made a list, guys. Woo-hoo! We made the 12 best partnership and business development podcasts so far from the folks at Crossbeam. And it was a delightful surprise to all of us. And we really appreciate their shout out and their endorsement. Thank you for that. And we were the only ones listed as funny.
Right.
Which was my favorite bit of that is hey, they think we're funny.
So that's the so far. So I'm hoping that, you know, when they do the redo, that we'll still be on the list. But nobody will
have to keep hustling.
Exactly. That's just further motivation. But I did appreciate that interpretation. Their scorecard, very robust, very professional, looking at all the different depths of what you might be spending your time with. I think every single person who listens to this podcast knows this stuff can be dry if you do not actually have a sense of humor. If you try to take yourself too seriously, we all know a pundit or two in our industry who forever is grumbling and sour. And let's have some fun while we talk about the business of technology.
To be honest, and this is kind of a segue into the first topic, but a lot of times people find what the news in our industry to be boring, right? It's like, it doesn't apply to me. I don't see how that has anything to do with me. I don't see where the future is, blah, 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 blah. And we're like, look, the future is like coming at you like a freight train. So
let me dive in
the news.
Yeah, let me dive in there because this one has the potential to be gruesome. So we're going to try and keep it more towards what we think we can do about it. But the first topic we want to talk about today is to focus a little bit on this idea of the gap between the products offered by the vendors and where the market is going. For me, this is like one of those bits that I've been thinking about a lot recently. I actually had a video come out just recently that did really well. Thank you all for watching. Talking about my thinking on where Microsoft is going with their, what I call an RMM, in terms of where they're going, where our traditional RMM, I'm putting that in quotes, players are thinking about alerts, and Microsoft has a product that's about state management. I get totally bashed by people that didn't watch the video saying it's not an RMM. And it's like, okay, you're not getting my point. What I worry about for our space is the idea of the market is continually moving. If you are a technology services provider, you are what I consider an assembler. You take things off the shelf and you combine them to make something else that works. You are not a builder, meaning that I create those components that come off the shelves. Generally, the vendors are creating those bits. To be a good assembler, you have to have the parts coming off and you have to have a fresh supply of those parts. If you want to stretch the analogy, it's new Lego bits or whatever the thought of in there. You are an assembler. That is a very important piece of the value chain. But if the vendors you rely on are not creating new bricks for you to pull off the shelf and the market's moving forward, that's a risk. And so I'm setting that going like, I worry about that risk. Guys, what do you think of it?
Well, there's so many pieces to this because another angle is that vendors have always been doing this. They're constantly, you know, mixing things up. We've all known at least one vendor who has bought an interaction tool and then sold the same tool a few years later.
Right.
Making money both ways. So, but you know, one of the things that's happened as in the evolution of these tools is that sometimes tools get combined and sometimes the partners keep their heads down and say, no, I won't use the antivirus that ships with my RMM because I love this other antivirus. And, you know, it has a 97.88 rating instead of a 97.65 rating. It's like, oh my God, you know, save a dollar per desktop and just use the tool that's included. And yet they don't even see that evolution is happening because they're kind of down in the weeds. And I encourage people to take a step back and say, big picture, where does this fit in my stack? Because we all build stacks based on, you know, kind of your assembler idea, right? We build a collection of tools that we think is going to provide maximum service for maximum profit.
See, and if you want to take the terminology just one step further within our specific space, there once was a day where we were all called resellers. and we took a product from point A and we moved it to point B and we got paid in the transaction, right? And then we all got very offended. I don't just resell, I add value, right? We became value-added resellers, and then we became some flavor of a solution provider, okay? The definition of who we are as animals is that we are not simply passing through the capabilities of somebody else's product. Take that into the managed services space specifically, and if the entire suite of your service offerings and the things that you bill to your customers is defined by and limited by the capabilities of the tool sets that you use to do your work, then by definition, all I need to do to compete with you effectively is buy the same tool set that you use and learn to use it. And then I can go to every one of your customers and say, you know, all those things that they claim that they can do, all this brilliant advanced technical service, me too. I can do all of those very same things because everything they do is defined within the scope of a tool.
Right. And they also get really hung up on this idea of sunk cost. They get really hung up on the idea that I've put all this money, I've put all this time, I've put all this investment. Yep. And you know what that did? That got you to today. And that got you to today. That's what that did. But you know what? It might not get you to tomorrow. And I always think about, like, I think about this from a car perspective. Like, so I freely admit, I lease my cars. I turn them in every 3 years because I want the new one, right? And I have this moment every time I'm taking in the car. You have this sort of twang of guilt, right? Because you're like, well, that's my car. And I have, like, that's the one that I am emotionally invested in. And I have had 3 years of fun with that. And I've identified with it. And then, oh, you know what's, and I almost, you anthropomorphize the vehicle, right? And like, well, you'll feel bad about it on its next spot, right? Don't get hung up on that. Because, like, it's a tool. It spent that car spent 3 years getting me around. Did a great job with that. Is that the right one to get me around for the next 3 years? Nope. Need the new one because I don't want to spend the money on maintenance or on whatever, you know, piece to it is. Oh, and by the way, there's some new capabilities that I want to have in something else. And so don't get hung up on this idea of sunk cost. And by the way, I'm going to use this example forever now. A year ago, if anybody had said, I bet you couldn't move all your customers remote in 3 weeks, you would have said, you're right, that's just too much work. And then you did it.
Right. And you just did it.
Right.
So it wasn't a huge big deal. The world did not come to an end.
Right. But don't tell me how hard it is to switch out your tool. Oh, I couldn't possibly do it. Well, you did something way harder.
You know, it's so interesting. I literally this morning from where we're recording this had a discussion with a brand new MSP who is, you know, asking the basic questions, although he's a bit older. So he's been through the mill before and he knows the right questions to ask. So he was saying, should I just buy a stack where I can plug it in and call the same person for all of my support, or should I put together the ultimate collection of the perfect tools? And then the second question was, to be honest, do I really need to learn all this stuff, or should I sell just enough to be super profitable and outsource everything that I'm not an expert at? And I'm like, man, those are two really good questions. And I have my answers.
The answer is yes.
Yes. The answer is every business model is individual, local, and unique. You get to choose how you do the things you do, because as soon as you do it exactly the way that everybody else does it, you are now a commodity and you will compete on price. Please be distinct.
Yep.
All righty. So that's enough for that topic, Brian. Let's see what's next.
So as a logical extension on this one, we were having a conversation behind the scenes a while back, and we really sparked onto something that I'm quite passionate about. And the concept that we will discuss, and I've posted an article in the show notes that you can take a look at, is it's a couple of years ago, but it does a really good job of explaining the concept of invisible or transparent technology. And what I mean by that is, the most effective technologies are the ones that I don't need to be an expert in order to use them. They are either integrated or invisible to the point where I can get my job done without needing to be focused on these tools. And exactly in the spirit of our first topic here today that we've been discussing, if I need to be more concerned about my own tools and technologies that I'm using to do my job than I am about my customers and how well I do my job, I am completely missing the point. The way I always like to look at this is, you know, I am neither a nuclear physicist nor an electrical engineer. Neither of those things is in my education or my resume. I am not qualified to do those things. And yet, you know what I am qualified to do? I can make the burrito hot because I can put it in the microwave. I can push a few buttons and the burrito gets hot using the principles of nuclear physics and electrical engineering. I don't need to be a PhD in the stuff behind the keypad because someone made it transparent. This is what I'm advocating as the way forward for the things we sell as well as for the tools that we use. Let's stop making the technology the point and make them more invisible. Thoughts from you guys?
Well, it's my first thought was, is why I'm not a nuclear physicist, but I play one on TV. And this fits to me, thinking about it this way fits to me to always this core idea of our job is to deliver business value. Our job is to translate these problems to the customer. Like, the customer doesn't care, right? The customer does not care about all of the bits behind, and in fact, likes it best when the technology is invisible, when it falls into the background. You know, I often think about like that, those, the user, the end user of the technology, not at all struggling on anything of it. That can they pick it up? Can they just use it? Can they just interact with it? I have done something right when that's the implementation. Mike, personal version of that always is the, like, everybody knows I'm a home automation nut. If Sharon can't pick up the device and work it, I have failed because it will not last. It will not last in my house because it will get worn out. And so I think about it that way. And I think about the business version of that. Like, can any user be effective with it right away? If I have done that, then I have succeeded at exactly what you've just described.
And it is the, you know, the big topic these days, CX, right? Customer experience. Do you guys remember the X10 home automation system, like from 25 years ago? It was amazing, but no one, even the three of us, could pick it up and just use it.
Right.
Right? And the idea that you would say, you know, hey, wiretap, dim my lights, like, that's as easy as it is today. And now we just do it. We buy things off the shelf. We click a couple of buttons and now we can turn the lights blue. Like, that's it. Go ahead.
The other interesting thing that I think about when you talk about this is I've talked about the idea of ubiquitous computing too. This is where ubiquitous computing and invisible computing like sort of hit to me. This idea of the technology being invisible is a core tenet. The idea of ubiquitous computing, where the idea where I can interact with the technology anywhere that I am, like when the two come together, that's where I think it's like, oh, wow, we've hit the sweet spot where like we're in the true future where I can talk to the Star Trek computer and it can understand me and it doesn't matter the interaction. Anybody who's thinking about ubiquitous computing, if you can layer this in, that's where you get to true effectiveness.
Absolutely.
I remember, this is my old man story, but I remember, I got started in technology helping companies get connected to the internet. And there was a time when I remember people saying, if the telephone were this difficult, no one would use it, right? It would take months and months and months, sometimes 6 or 8 months to get a fully operational internet connection. And now it's like, oh, you want internet? Okay, here, click a button here. All right, have a nice day, right? And so we've almost come that way with Zoom, right? Because people used to, like it's 6 months ago, WebEx and some of these other things that every time you touch it, it needs an update. Every time you tell, oh, have you downloaded this and have you downloaded that? And Zoom, you click a button and it works. And I think we've taught so many people to be connected this way They think it's that easy.
Well, see, and here's a critical point, right? If you think of this, and Carl, you hit the nail right on the head. It's the user's experience. Okay, well, the question is, who is the user and what are their qualifications? If the technical requirements to use your stuff are significant, then your marketplace is very small, only limited to specialists and technicians. But if your stuff is immediately accessible, it's intuitive to use, now you can sell to everybody. Now, the best example of this that I can think of, right? The three of us, we grew up in a world where in order to be in the technology industry, you were intimately familiar with what the inside of a machine looked like. You probably soldered things onto other things. You can configure the dip switches to the user experience as well as into the operating system. Like, we know how to build and configure computers. I have a 24-year-old son, born and raised in a world of technology, digital native, as we like to describe. Do you think that he knows how to configure his own Apple ID user account? He does not. Now, how in the world is it possible that everything has advanced, everything is so much more capable, so much more powerful than it used to be, and yet modern users have no clue how to use it? Well, ask yourself this question, back to Dave's example with the car. If you own a car, if you drive a car, how many of you are qualified to right now, immediately after this podcast, go out in your driveway and replace the fuel pump? You're not. I'm not. I quite frankly don't believe that I could even identify the fuel pump right under the hood in my modern car, right? I don't need to know that stuff. I just need to be able to get in, sit down, turn it on, and drive away. That's the user experience that
I would be remiss if I did not bring up the fact that we've talked about this with a certain assumption that everyone has it. And I've been talking about this a lot recently, and we have to have the hard conversations also about the availability of these technologies and the digital divide that is causing it. And I continue to believe we are limiting our market by not addressing this problem. Like, the fact that we're still struggling with students getting online because not everybody has internet connectivity. We do not have communities at the same level. And yet at one level, we're pressing forward into the future. Yay. But we have to be really careful not to leave people behind, because from my perspective as a good capitalist going out, like, I'd like to sell them those things. Like, I'd like to sell them services. I'd like to make sure that we are not limiting parts of our society. This is falling along racial lines. It is falling along economic lines.
Another component as well, which is this so-called digital divide, will be wider and deeper than the literacy divide.
Yes.
That think about kids nowadays who can't figure out an iPhone, can't figure out how to get connected.
Right.
There's so many people, I've met so many people in traveling who they get to a foreign city and you're like, oh, did you get a data plan? And they say, no, I'm just going to go to a Starbucks and figure it out. And they literally do.
Right. And I will keep bringing this up, because the reason I think this is important is I can start with it's the right thing to do, but I'm also going to remind don't limit your market. You want more people to sell to, you want more people to take your services to. Solving this problem opens your market.
All righty. So moving on, topic number three. So, you know, we started with Microsoft, and I guess the first topic and this topic are related to the last thing we did last week, which was to talk about Microsoft moving into the RMM space. One of the things that Dave said on the Business of Tech podcast was, you know, hey, Microsoft wants to make this universal, and people say, oh, but I have to have PowerShell. Microsoft made PowerShell open source 4 years ago, and yet people are not adopting it. So, you know, one of the questions is, how well does this solution fit with the rest of what we're doing? You know, do they play well with others? If you were to look at your stack and say, I quote unquote, don't have any choice, I have to go to Microsoft. Well, is that really true? Many of us could have been relying on Microsoft. And actually, many people today still do rely on Microsoft for patches, fixes, and updates. Other people say, well, philosophically, I want to delay those patches. I want to make sure that I don't have a zero-day attack and, you know, so forth and so on. So you know, there is some discussion. It is not the end of the game simply because Microsoft entered this space. They still have to win our hearts, and they have to play well enough with others. And then well, separate from that is the question of, will they ever be best of breed?
You're almost your I have to break your framing just for a moment to remind everyone, you've immediately assumed you have to play in the Microsoft ecosystem, right? And you've immediately just assumed that, you talk about the endpoints and you're implying patching, and it's like, well, you could just go off Chromebook. And I know there's a bunch of people now screaming, going, no, you couldn't possibly. It's like, there are whole businesses, whole schools that have done this, everybody. There's whole Mac ecosystem. There's I just want to make sure that we don't limit this thinking to just that. The core point you're making is like, hey, do you have to play in their ecosystem? Do you have to go down with their tools? Can you break out from that? And I think that's super important, but I just don't want people to think that you must play in that. If you don't like it, go hop to another one. There are options.
Yeah. So yeah, in the real world, I do have to say, I mean, our listeners know that whatever 93% of their users are using Windows in their business environment. And, you know, some small percentage are using other operating systems, and that's cool. Those operating systems also have to be patched, fixed, and updated. So will Microsoft be using this tool to apply the patches to OS X or?
Yeah, okay. You got, again, I'm gonna throw data back at you, okay? So Windows is 35% of the operating system market worldwide. Android is 39%. Android is bigger than Windows.
And see, so, because this gets you to the bigger point, Dave. I'll stretch your logic one ring further out of the concept. What are the devices and the endpoints to which you are referring and providing services for? If they are desktop and laptop computers, then I get exactly where Carl's market share comes in. Windows is by far the dominant thing. But if I go to a tablet, if I go to a Chromebook, if I go to a smartphone, and then, oh no, let's go one step even more logically distant to the Internet of Things and all of these connected systems and sensor-based devices, absolutely none of them are operating on the same operating system across the board. What we're looking for is not simply one universal tool that can manage everything within our traditional neighborhood of desktops, laptops, and servers. We're looking for a way to manage all of the technology that a customer deploys in the data center, across the network, on the desktop, into the factory, onto their mobile devices.
I agree with that, but I gotta say, when you broaden it to the point where you're talking about anything that's got a processor in it is included in this discussion, you have eliminated 97% of our listeners, because those people know that what they do is they make money selling managed services for desktops and laptops and servers that are running specific operating systems. And yes, some of them are Mac, are Linux.
All right, let me bring it back down, because I just don't want everyone, I agree with you that for the core, by default, I can't assume that they are playing in the Microsoft ecosystem. But I just have to remind everybody, you don't have to do that. And your customers don't have to either. Carl, you do make the quip, but like, well, in the real world, yeah, I can actually take you customers that are using not Windows in real businesses. Now, am I going to sit here and say like they're a massive majority? No, but I don't want to be dismissive of spaces that are actually accomplishing what they want. For example, in education, like education is a big space.
Absolutely.
For Chromebooks. That is real work. Like that is.
It's absolutely do exist. I'm just saying, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, it falls into that when you hear hoofbeats, think horses, right? You know, not unicorns or zebras. You know, when our listeners look at this, they wouldn't care at all. We wouldn't be discussing topics one or two and one or three today if they didn't all live in the Windows world.
And look, and I'm very pro Microsoft right now. Like, particularly if I come at this, let's throw the cloud on top of this, right? If you're going to pick a public cloud provider,
I've said it on Business of Tech too. Like, you've got three players. You've got Microsoft, you've got Google, you've got Amazon. No, you don't. You have one choice. It's Microsoft if you're playing in exactly the parameters you just talked about, because like Amazon doesn't even have a productivity option for me, and Google, okay, no. Like, you know, they're right. Like, now they have a partner program. Thank you, Jay McBain, for making fun of me. But like, you know, they have a program, but are they, do I consider them a serious player in this space? No, not really. I'm just back to your core question. Like, how does this all fit together when you have other solutions? Sometimes you've got to think about, like, do I have the one that actually takes me where I want to go, or where the market is going, or where my market is going?
So you're really just broadening the conversation from the tools we use every day to make money to, and the operating systems we
well, I think it's
put out in the world.
Again, you can't talk about them separately.
Yeah, I'll take it in a slightly different direction, right? Not market share, but share of wallet. There once was a time where managing the Windows-based devices in the data center and on the desktop represented the lion's share of technology expenditure that our customers were investing in, and therefore the places and products where they needed professional assistance. But if your same decision maker is now saying, yeah, that's cool, I got desktops over here, I got servers in the cloud, I know how I'm running that piece of my neighborhood, but now I'm integrating with all of these other operational technology as well as the Internet of Things componentry. If it's the same human being who's making that budget decision and you say, I refuse to expand my scope, I will still sit here on the computers and the servers and the network and I won't get into that other stuff. Well, your ability to control or influence the behavior of that customer goes down exponentially every new vendor or every new service provider they introduce to this conversation. Don't get left behind because you're still only managing what we originally defined as the technology core, because that is exponentially expanding around you.
Our conclusion every week seems to be, we live in a very complicated world.
but you're exactly right. There's always the conclusion. If it wasn't complicated, it wouldn't be quite so profitable. I mean, come on. The complexity favors us all trying to make money off of it. That is the fun intellectual exercise. We are paid to be experts, but I'm not slamming the complexity at times.
Exactly. Yeah, thank God for the complexity. Otherwise, we'd all be unemployed. Well, we have not solved all the world's problems once again. And this has been episode 80 of the Killing It. Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It Podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.